Well, welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour, second hour of our program. What actually happened on 9/11? And why is this an enduring mystery, I guess, shall we say? And I just, first of all, I want to establish where I stand on this, and secondly, the ground rules of this thing. Lamar Waldron and I spent 17 years researching who killed Jack Kennedy. The killing of Kennedy, which happened in 63 when I was 12 years old, was the defining event for my generation. Jack, Robert, Martin Luther King, I mean, there's conspiracy theories around all of them. And Lamar and I spent 17 years, well over 100,000, maybe as much as twice that in dollars investigating this thing, suing the federal government, filing FOIA filings, getting thousands of documents declassified. We ended up writing an 840-page book with over 2,400 footnotes, which was made into a made-for-TV, a one-hour special by NBC, which shows about every month on the Discovery Channel. And the book is called Ultimate Sacrifice, about the Kennedy assassination. And I can tell you, having shown up many, many years, every year down in Dallas is the, quote, conspiracy nut convention. And I mean, that's what the outsiders call it, the JFK Researchers Convention, and where people share notes and try and figure out what's going on. And Lamar and I think we actually figured it out. But I can tell you, it took 17 years, and it took a hell of a lot of work. And I'm very skeptical of anybody who says, I know absolutely what went on, or I know absolutely what didn't go on. So my position is very agnostic on this. I think it's going to take, you know, I mean, here we are with the JFK assassination 40 years later. I think it's going to, 44 years later. I think it's going to take a long time to figure out. That said, I think that a good, healthy discussion, a good, healthy debate, and raising the questions, and for that matter, raising the answers to the questions, is a reasonable and healthy thing. Michael Shermer is with us. He's the founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine, the executive director of the Skeptics Society, their website, skeptic.com. Michael, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Sorry.
And Kevin Ryan is with us. He's the co-editor of the Journal of 9/11 Studies, the former site manager for Underwriter Laboratories in South Bend, and the website journalof911studies.com. Kevin Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you both with us. Michael is taking the position. Well, I'm not even going to try and characterize you guys' position. My goal here, my job here is to moderate. The one thing I'm going to ask is that each of you keep your questions or answers relatively short and that nobody try to filibuster the other. It's just, you know, and if it happens, I'll just jump in. So let's start, first of all, with you, Kevin. You're taking opening statement.
Oh, okay. Well, really what it looks like we have here, we have a couple of hypotheses, and it's different than JFK because it's not really a question of a conspiracy theory or not. That term actually is wrong for several reasons here, because unless you believe that the crimes of 9/11 were committed by one person acting alone, you believe in a conspiracy theory. Actually, you don't believe in a theory at all. You believe in some sort of hypothesis, because the two major hypotheses are both not well accepted. The official hypothesis is that Al-Qaeda, with no help from any government agency, committed these irrational acts of violence, and we're not really sure why. It requires extreme negligence on the part of numerous government agencies, and multiple false stories have been told. And in the end, it just gives us a reason to invade these strategically important lands. And on the other hand, we've got this alternative hypothesis that suggests that government agencies were involved and either let it happen or made it happen. And in other words, the crimes of 9/11 were committed by those with the means to accomplish them and those who benefit from the war on terror. So along with that is, if you believe in, if you lean toward the alternative hypothesis, you also believe there's very likely been an intentional cover-up, which can be seen as a greater crime.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Michael Shermer, Kevin suggesting if both of you, if I paraphrase something incorrectly, feel free to correct me and jump in. But just for the sake of brevity, sometimes I'll restate something shortly. My sense of what Kevin just said is that it definitely was a conspiracy. The question is, was it a conspiracy by Al-Qaeda, by a small band of Muslim extremists, or was it a conspiracy by the federal government, or people within the government, or people within the United States, or was it a conspiracy by both? Your response.
Well, Al-Qaeda, of course, is a conspiracy. And, you know, they said they did it. They said they were proud they did it. They would do it again if they could. And they have a long history of doing those sorts of things. Don't forget that the World Trade Center was already attacked in 1993. Over 1,000 people were injured in that truck bomb attack. There was all the countless bombings of U.S. embassies throughout the 90s that Clinton had to deal with, thwarted attempts like at LAX by Al-Qaeda. And so obviously, you know, when you have that kind of evidence, and then we have to think about the economy of explanation. That is it possible for 19 people to do that versus, say, thousands of Bush operatives secretly running around planning demolition bombs in the World Trade Center buildings for months or years ahead of time without getting caught? The reason we tend to favor conspiracy theories is I think we have a cognitive dissonance between the size of the event and the size of the cause. We tend to think huge, massive events like 9/11 should have an equally massive, complex cause. But in fact, it's just the opposite, that it would be much easier for 19 people to hide in the nooks and crannies of a free democratic society like the one in which we live and get away with these sorts of things versus thousands of operatives that would have to be involved if the U.S. government orchestrated, not to mention the issue of can the U.S. government, which can hardly do anything with competence, manage to pull this off with great confidence and competence, and nobody ever even spill the beans? I mean, look what happens to our U.S. Spies or former government agencies, Bush agents, Bush operatives, Bush administration members. What happens when they leave office? They write books. They go on Larry King Live. They spill the beans. They tell all kinds of national secrets and stories in order to sell their books and whatnot. Not one person has done that in relation to 9/11 if it was a government conspiracy, which is exactly what we would expect.
Okay, so Kevin Ryan, it sounds to me like what Michael is saying is Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is probably the right one.
Yeah, I you know, personally, I believe also that it's very likely that the truth is simple, but it's not obvious. And I've heard Michael use the complexity argument on both sides for this issue. But again, we have two hypotheses is what we've got. One, in really what separates them is the question of were government agencies involved. So if we can agree with the fact that there is such a thing as Al-Qaeda, and one important question is what historical facts about Al-Qaeda and these alleged hijackers should make people skeptical of the official hypothesis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's clear that if you look through the history that Al-Qaeda is a product of the CIA's Afghanistan programs of the 1980s. You know, as, when the Mujahideen was fighting the Soviets, Al-Qaeda has deep connections to the Saudis and to the ISI in Pakistan. And a lot of the hijackers have connections to the ISI as well. You know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the mastermind. He's known to have worked for the ISI. Syed Sheikh, the 9/11 paymaster, was an ISI agent. And the President Musharraf has a book that says that Syed Sheikh was also an MI6 agent, according to the president. I don't know. But in any case, Syed Sheikh reportedly wired $100,000 to Mohammed Atta just before the 9/11 attacks, and at the direction of the ISI Chief General Ahmed.
So
it looks very much like the Pakistan's ISI was involved.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the U.S. government was.
Not necessarily, no.
Yeah. Okay. So Michael Shermer, you're
yeah. This is interesting. This is not quite the direction I thought we were going to go, but that's okay. I mean, let's be realistic here. American foreign policy since Kissinger has always been this realpolitik, where we get into bed with dictators all the time. It's a question of, as Lyndon Johnson said, he's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we do these kinds of things, and it's one of the reasons that you know, presidents that don't want to do that, that want to hold by strict moral principles, are criticized. That, you know, you have to live in the real world, and we have to fund this dictator because he's better than that communist guy or whatever it is. So, yeah, no doubt, there's been a lot of government underhanding things in the Middle East because it's such a complex mess. But that's still different than saying that they intended to bring down the World Trade Center.
Right. So let's get into why people should be skeptical of the 9/11 Commission report, or not. Maybe why, you know, alternatively, why people should think that this was the last word on it. And what really happened? What really happened on that day? And in the second half hour of our program, we'll drop in a few calls from our listeners. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
No, we're not missing it here. What happened on 9/11? Kevin Ryan is with us from the Journal of 9/11Studies.com. Take out the "the." It's Journal of 9/11Studies.com, co-editor of that journal. And Michael Shermer with Skeptic Magazine, the publisher of Skeptic Magazine, executive director of the Skeptic Society, Skeptic.com. I want to get into the inflammatory meat and potatoes stuff here. 9/11 Commission got it all wrong. Building 7 was controlled demolition. What about these things that hit the Pentagon? What happened to all the videotapes? Why did they smuggle away all the evidence? Why did Rudy Giuliani suspend the rescue operations as soon as he had the gold out of the bottom of the World Trade Center? Probably that's more, you know, self-evident. Anyhow, let's start with you, Kevin. Why should we be skeptical of the 9/11 Commission report?
Well, for a couple of very important reasons. They left out so many important facts of their report, and they had a lot of conflicts of interest, and also they just uncritically accepted accounts from government officials. So they left out just a gigantic number of facts. All the conflicts of interest of the Philip Zelikow, the executive director, for example, who's a Bush insider and really controlled the investigation. Any mention of World Trade Center 7, the third skyscraper that supposedly collapsed despite not being hit by a plane. The fact that President Bush's relatives were in charge of the security company for the World Trade Center, United Airlines, and Dulles Airport.
That was in the past, though, wasn't it?
Actually, it was in 1999 through 2000 for Marvin Bush, but Wirt Walker, his cousin, was CEO at the time that the attacks occurred. So, yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of FBI agents who reportedly claim to have known the targets and the dates of the attacks well in advance, and their testimony was not included. There was news stories suggesting after 9/11 that the U.S. military allowed Osama bin Laden to escape. Just the fact that the Bush and the bin Laden families are old business partners might have been something you could put in that report.
George Sr. was having breakfast with Osama bin Laden's brother on the morning of 9/11.
It
was,
right.
I believe that was in the New York Times. So a lot of questions here. Kevin, you're asserting that all of these questions point to conspiracy.
Well, no, I'm saying that we have a conspiracy no matter what, but of the two hypotheses, the one that the evidence supports most strongly is that there were government agencies involved in the attacks. We can't prove either one way or another.
What about rogues within the government? People who like with the Kennedy assassination. I mean, you know, E. Howard Hunt was part of the CIA, but that doesn't mean that the CIA had anything to do with it if he did.
Sure, and if you just ask a simple question like who is responsible for in charge of defending the country when it was under attack, and what did those people do on 9/11? We find out that everybody in that chain of command was either mysteriously absent or completely incompetent during that period of the attacks. I mean, Bush was reading My Pet Goat, right? The next person was Donald Rumsfeld, and the commission says he did not enter the chain of command until the morning's events were over. And then the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Henry Shelton, was flying to London, and his replacement was in a meeting. And General Montague Winfield of the NMCC, believe it or not, asked his deputy to take over for just the 2 hours of the day of the attack. This poor Captain Leidig, who replaced him for just those 2 hours, turned out to be incompetent. And then NORAD's General Eberhardt was indisposed because he was driving around on Cheyenne Mountain.
Now, so, is all of this or is none of this in the 9/11 report, Kevin?
Really, none of this is clarified in the... Well, obviously, the president was indisposed. He was in this elementary school.
But most of the stuff that you're raising that really raises eyebrows, you're suggesting is not in the 9/11 report. I mean, I've skimmed the thing, but I haven't read every word. Michael Shermer, your response, Michael Shermer of Skeptic.com.
Yeah. Well, just for fun here, while we were talking, I typed into Google Video building demolition, and there are no less than 2,200 videos of buildings that collapse due to intentional demolition.
Right.
And every one of them, I haven't found one exception yet, collapses from the bottom up. And yet the World Trade Center buildings collapsed from the top down, not quite the top, right where the airplanes impacted. So are we to believe that the Bush administration orchestrated the intentional demolition of the World Trade Center buildings, planted all those bombs without anybody demolition devices without anybody catching them, and then managed to place the bombs in just such a way that they would start exploding right where the plane happened to hit, so they'd have to know where the planes were going to hit and time all that? Are we really supposed to believe
Kevin,
that?
Kevin, is that possible?
Well, there's a great deal of assumptions here. Michael's already worked out how many people. He said thousands of operatives would be needed. Let's not get away from ourselves here. We've got a couple of hypotheses. We've got evidence. We don't need to speculate to the point of distraction. Let's consider where the towers first failed, though. We know the North Tower.
We have to take a break in about 10 seconds, 15 seconds.
All right.
But first of all, collapsing from the top down versus the bottom up.
No, there are examples of buildings being demolished from the top down. I'd go to 911blogger.com. You can find an example there.
Okay. We'll continue this conversation between Michael Shermer of Skeptic.com and Kevin Ryan, Journal of 911studies.com. Maybe drop a few calls in here as we go through. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman. Yeah, here we are on the radio. And who did 9/11, how, and why? We're talking with Kevin Ryan, Journal of 911studies.com, co-editor of the Journal of 911 Studies, and Michael Shermer of the Skeptic magazine, Skeptic.com, executive director of the Skeptics Society. And let's see. Kevin, you had just gone through a long list of some very serious questions. Michael, your response.
I guess the other thing I was going to add about, you know, in terms of how the buildings collapse and all that and the assumptions we make, there's also a cognitive problem here. It's called the hindsight bias. It is after a big event like this, people start combing through the details of the event, the records of what happened in the months leading up to it. And Pearl Harbor is a perfect example. There were, for many years, lots of conspiracy theories about how Roosevelt knew about it or
still is
orchestrated it, or Churchill and Roosevelt together.
There are still people who believe
it. And for one, just like one specific example where we see, like, with the memo that Condi Rice got in August about Al-Qaeda attacking the United States on United States soil, why didn't we heed that warning? Well, there's actually lots of memos about Al-Qaeda doing all sorts of things all over the world, and of course after the event it's easy to go with hindsight and pick out the one that mattered. And the same thing with the Pearl Harbor attack. There were definitely memos that the U.S. government had about the Japanese possibly attacking Pearl Harbor. It's easy to pick those out and ignore the hundreds of others about the Japanese attacking in other places, because after the event, after the fact, you go through and you reconstruct a causal chain that points right to that event, and then hold those accountable who should have seen that chain coming, when in fact, we at the time, you don't know what's going to happen.
Okay. Kevin Ryan from the Journal of 911studies.com. Talk to us about Building 7.
All right, well, Building 7 was a 47-story building that was not hit by a plane, and yet it collapsed in 6.5 seconds, essentially free fall speed, and pretty much into its own footprint. And more than 6 years later, we're still waiting for an official explanation about it. And in 2002, FEMA gave us a really low probability suggestion, they said, and NIST has continued to push their report out. But it's important to know that no building has ever collapsed from fire before or after 9/11, and no building exhibiting all the features of demolition has ever not been a demolition. So speaking of probabilities, the chance that the first three examples of fire-induced collapse of a tall building happening all in the same day is infinitesimal. So I think it's a good point for us to be skeptical about, especially considering the 9/11 Commission didn't mention in their supposedly comprehensive report.
Here's the question that I can't get my head around, Kevin, and let me, Michael, if I may, just I suspect this is something that you might say, so I'll say it. The flying of the planes into these two buildings was plenty. Why would anybody have to go in and put in explosives on top of that? I mean, you know, that was enough to give George Bush everything he needed to declare, you know, to that's his Reichstag fire. That's,
well,
you know,
I'm not sure, Tom. You have to consider what the alternative hypothesis means. And I think David Ray Griffin put it well when he said, whoever controls the world's oil controls the world. So this is not just
that on this program 2 years ago.
This is not just another government-sponsored false flag event like the Gulf of Tonkin or many others. But it's more of a psychological operation aimed at a large audience.
Why bring down the buildings? I mean, the planes were enough to
right.
horrify
they
us.
They needed people to be in front of the TV, is what it looks like. So, you know, if the buildings are rigged for demolition, it doesn't matter when, you know, there's a demolition team there. It doesn't matter where the buildings are hit. They're rigged for demolition. And, you know, if you wait an hour or so until everybody's in front of the TV, then the psychological effect is there. And that's what drives the emotionally driven 9/11 wars. You know, if something had just happened to a building, I mean, something happened to a building before. The embassies in Africa were blown up, right?
The World Trade Center was blown up. It just didn't.
The World Trade Center was
1993.
Blown up. The Oklahoma City building was blown up. Lots of buildings have been blown up. They didn't result in generating endless wars that are supposed to protect us from terrorism, which is an oxymoron to begin with. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. So what makes sense is that those people with the power to make this happen, to allow an effective stand down of our air defenses, to allow these hijackers to get lucky at every single turn, to essentially have access to and the means to bring those buildings down. Those are the people who, it seems, are much more likely to have affected the crimes.
Michael Shermer.
Well, Tom, I think your point is well taken. It wouldn't have mattered really what happened to the full extent on 9/11, we'd be in a war. I mean, I think you can legitimately criticize the Bush administration for all of its steps along the way and even its motives without any of this 9/11 conspiracy stuff going on, because that's just sort of the way politics works. And you know, again,
but what about the security standing down? What about, you know, ignoring the
warnings?
Well,
okay, let's look at the specific points. The if you watch the videos of the World Trade Center buildings collapsing, they both collapse right at the point where the planes hit.
No, actually, that's
where they begin.
You can watch it.
We can all watch it. Let's all go online
sure.
and watch it right now.
Let's do
that's
it.
Where they've collapsed.
Well, hang on just a second, Michael. Kevin wants to contest that.
It's actually not true at all. If we look at the North Tower, the first thing that happens is this antenna on the top drops first. That means the core of the building failed first. And additionally, on the South Tower, the first thing that happened is this large upper section starts to tilt over, and it's got kinks all along the top of it. So it fails in multiple spots, even away from the fire. But again, even if the collapse was to start, or the destruction was to start right at the point of impact, if the buildings are rigged for demolition, what does it matter?
Okay, Michael, I'm sorry I interrupted you mid-sentence, but I wanted that point to get resolved.
When you say they did it, who in the world are we talking about here? Where are all these people? Why have they not come forward? Are they murdered? Are they kept silent? Again, back to my first point, look what happens to all these people, like Plame, what's her name?
Valerie.
Yeah, Valerie Plame. Look, she's got a book contract out there. I mean, this is what people do once they leave government. I mean, there's the two.
But Valerie Plame is not running around bragging that she helped murder 3,000 people.
Yeah, well, right.
I mean, who's going to do that?
Well, no, you wouldn't need somebody who actually did it. Just imagine all the people that would have to be running around. It's now been estimated there would be 60 tons of explosives to bring down the World Trade Center.
Not at all. Not at all.
So where are those? And where are the explosives? How come all the people combing through the wreckage didn't find anything? Not one little piece of evidence for that.
Not at all.
Kevin, all that?
Kevin?
You've got really a lot of false speculation going on there. The Landmark Hotel was brought down with about 450 pounds of explosives. It's 30 stories tall. And so the World Trade Center, if you extrapolate that, would have required about 1,300 pounds of explosives. That's about 30 trips, you know, 10 people in three trips. It's not that difficult to believe at all. And, of course,
But speculating is one thing, but where's the evidence that is actually what happened?
Well, see, the evidence that demolition happened is about the effects, right? The sudden onset, the symmetrical and vertical fall, the near free fall speed. These are things that just can't happen in a fire-induced collapse, and we've really tried to prove. I mean, if the government has done anything, they've really tried to prove this fire-induced collapse hypothesis, and they've failed, and in fact proved it wrong through contradiction. They've tried so many things, and we found that the only thing we have left, which they never looked at, is the demolition hypothesis. And so, really, I think it's
actually the World Trade Center Building 7 does not collapse in a straight down to its footprint. It collapses at the point where the debris hit on the south side. If you look at the photos of the north side, it looks clean and fairly pristine. You can't believe it would have collapsed from that. But if you look on the photos on the south side, it burnt extensively for many hours.
Michael, if you have photos on the south side of the World Trade Center 7, you need to get those to the government. I don't believe they have any. And so far, I don't believe they've been published. So what really happened, if you look at the movie clip, this building collapses more perfectly than a perfect demolition. It comes down straight down. And uniformly down. It doesn't lean towards any damage. And really the only damage, again, that's speculation on the part of those supporting the official story, is supposedly...
But Kevin, let me just toss a...
Sure.
I got it. If you really wanted to create psychological chaos and mass mayhem, why not have the buildings fall over sideways, take out 10 other buildings with them, and kill 20, 30,000 people rather than 3,000? Then you'd really have a 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor.
I tell you what, that's possible. I don't know why the reasoning for whoever did it, why they did it in the exact way. But again, the hypotheses don't need to be proven. We need to look at the evidence and pick which of them is best suited to be accepted or rejected. And so, you know, to speculate on all the different things that would have had to happen, like Michael has done, he knows exactly how many people would be needed. He knows exactly how many explosives, and that turns out to be wrong. It's very unskeptical.
Let me give you an analogy. Last April, there was a crash in an underpass under a bridge in Oakland. A tanker truck crashed into a bridge. It caused this huge gasoline fire, and the bridge collapsed. Now, why is nobody getting all excited about somebody intentionally demolishing this bridge? Well, because things collapse if they burn long enough. You don't have to completely melt steel. You only have to weaken it. And that's what happened with the World Trade Center building.
I think we've hashed this one out. I'd like to move, because we have very little time here. We're going to have to take a break in about a minute, and then we'll only have 6 or 7 minutes when we resolve this. And I apologize to the people waiting on hold, but I just want to get as much as I can out of you guys. Let's talk to how it came to be that these planes hit these buildings and the Pentagon and in Pennsylvania. Kevin, your best thought on how this came about.
That is a great question, because, you know, the airspace over Washington is restricted, and it's considered the most heavily defended on the planet. It even has a name. It's called P-56B, a 3-mile inter-restricted zone over the White House, Capitol, and the Pentagon. So, you know, we've got... also, Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta telling us that the Vice President was warned every 10 or 20 miles as this plane was coming in that it was coming in, and he said that the orders should still stand. He told this young man telling him that. So it's interesting that Norman Mineta's testimony didn't get into the 9/11 Commission report, but it is clear that we had noticed that the Pentagon was going to be struck.
Okay, we'll continue with this conversation right after the break. Kevin Ryan, Journal of 9/11Studies.com, Michael Shermer, Skeptic.com. 46 minutes past the hour. 51 minutes past the hour, our quote for the day from Winston Churchill: the truth is incontrovertible. Malice may attack it, ignorance may deride it, but in the end, there it is. So what is the truth regarding 9/11? Michael Shermer, Skeptic Magazine. Why is it that Osama bin Laden isn't on the FBI's most wanted list, has never been charged with 9/11?
I have no idea. I have to ask the government that. I mean, why are we spending billions of dollars trying to find him if we don't want him? What difference does it make whether he's on the list or not? I don't think the FBI is going to find him because they're not in Afghanistan. They're here.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. I mean, otherwise, I mean, you can argue we're in Iraq for oil, but why would we be in Afghanistan other than just trying to dismantle Al-Qaeda?
Well, you could argue that Hamid Karzai used to be a consultant for UNICAL, and UNICAL wanted to build a gas pipeline across Afghanistan, et cetera. But that's getting, I think, a little away. Well, maybe it's not. I don't know.
Well, I think they were trying to connect too many dots there. Again, back to the economy of causality, I think Occam's razor, the simpler explanation. 19 guys can get away with it. Hundreds would most likely be caught, or eventually something would come out. We really have nothing. All of these arguments are, like in creationist circles, we call these the God of the gaps. Wherever you guys can't explain X, that must be where the supernatural entity came in to do something.
So well, Kevin,
wherever the government can't explain something, that must mean there's a conspiracy. Well, it's possible that maybe we just can't explain it yet.
Right, and sometimes there actually is a conspiracy. I mean, so Kevin Ryan, here. Again, I'm trying to play independent broker here, but Kevin, how small a conspiracy to, at the very least, allow this to happen could there be? And because I hear conspiracy theories that, Bush really didn't know where or when they were going to hit. He knew it was going to happen probably in August or September, and he knew it was probably going to happen in New York or Washington, D.C., and he wanted it to happen, and so they stood all the way up to, right down to, they had control systems in the Building 7 that flew the planes into the towers, and that's why they had to, there's this whole spectrum of, but how small a group could it have been?
Well, I think that there could have been a relatively small group based on a military sort of operation, a compartmentalized operation. I'm not an expert on those sorts of things, but as far as whistleblowers go, we do know there's been a lot of whistleblowers related to 9/11. I mean, there were FBI agents trying to contact John Ashcroft for the 6 weeks before 9/11 to give him exact details, and he wouldn't return their calls. We've got Sybil Edmonds, the FBI whistleblower, who told us, they haven't even mentioned anybody who's actually connected to Al-Qaeda in a mid or higher level. So the 9/11 Commission isn't even addressing the issue of Al-Qaeda. We've got Jersey girl Patty Casazza, who recently said that whistleblowers told her before 9/11 that the government knew the day, the type of attack, and the targets. So there's a lot of whistleblowers out there. That's not the question. The question is, why aren't people finding out about this? For example, World Trade Center 7 is a great example. A lot of people still don't know about that. It's no secret. It's no secret that building collapsed. So I think there are plenty of whistleblowers. There's plenty of a chance for the truth to yet come out.
Michael Shermer, skeptic.com, what about the stock options, these puts that were made before 9/11, betting on the collapse of United and American Airlines? You've got that. You've got all these whistleblowers. You've got, over 50 specific warnings to the Bush administration.
With the hindsight bias, we pick out anomalies. We connect the dots in some.
But that's what you do
way.
In a criminal investigation.
But if there was so much activity ahead of time, why didn't we know about it? Why didn't somebody do something about this? Because surely not everybody's going to be in on the conspiracy.
Well, it certainly seems to have worked out very well for the Bush administration.
Well, has it? I mean,
they got their wars.
All-time lowest ratings of a president.
I don't think he expected the war in Iraq to go south like that. But Halliburton stock is four times what it was. Dick Cheney has made millions and millions of dollars off this. The Bush family and Bechtel have made billions of dollars off this thing.
Yeah,
and continue to.
But you don't need a conspiracy for that. That's just good old American politics and business, right?
I mean, you think that's opportunism?
That happens. That happened in the Vietnam War. That doesn't mean.
Yeah, Lady Bird Johnson made out well.
We've got a conspiracy. Again, we've got a conspiracy no matter how you look at it. So the conspiracy theory term is just a derogatory term to try and turn people's minds away from looking at the evidence. But I think that, there's plenty of opportunity for the government, certain elements within the government, to have not only accomplished the attacks of 9/11 much more easily than 19 fellows.
How about the suicide boat bombing against the USS Cole in 2000?
How about it?
Yeah, I mean, do you think the U.S. government did that to its own ship?
Well, let me just pause this. We have 30 seconds before we have to wrap this up. I'm going to give each of you 15 seconds to wrap it up. So, Kevin Ryan, 15 seconds.
Hey, well, I think that the evidence that we have on hand points to the need to accept the alternative hypothesis. And, skeptics, natural skeptics, would be looking at that official hypothesis very closely and also at the evidence for the alternative.
And Michael Shermer?
Well, because I think it's legitimate to criticize the Bush administration for this whole business, this is only a distraction away from that because it's so far out there. Al-Qaeda said they did it. They'd do it again. They were proud that they did it, and I think we should take them at their word for it.
Okay, Michael Shermer, Skeptic.com, Kevin Ryan, Journal of 9/11/911, Studies.com. Gentlemen, both of you, thank you so much for coming on the program and talking with each other and with me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program here on Air America Radio. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. We've got a whole lot of callers on this topic at 20 after the hour. Christy Harvey is going to be dropping by to talk about what's the news under the radar. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Isaiah Poole from TomPaine.com and Rob Call from OpEdNews.com, our blogger segment. And at 45 minutes past the hour, we've got a correspondent from Talk Radio News calling in from, is it Pakistan, I believe, or Afghanistan? In any case, from someplace in the Middle East, is going to be calling into calling into the program. So I'm going to take calls right. And we also have our segment, our weekly segment, where we bring on a local advertiser who's doing really well with Progressive Talk Radio on a local station. And we want to highlight them. We're going to do that in this first segment. So I'm going to take a couple of calls here. We'll get the advertiser in, and then we're going to be going to everything else. So the bottom line of all this, the reason I tell you all this, is to please be very brief. Robert, Daly City, California.
Tom, thanks so much for having Kevin Ryan, and he's very intelligent, moral, and even-minded.
I agree with you. They're both great people, Rob. Robert, make your point, please, because I need to move along to other people as quickly as I can.
Yeah, well, Richard B. Cheney was running the U.S. Air Force training exercises on 9/11, and he's the guy that hijacked the U.S. Air Force training exercises, and an investigation will prove that.
Yeah, okay, great. I have heard that before, and I would love to see an investigation of this. Mike in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Mike.
Hi, how you doing, Tom? Thanks for having me.
Good point.
How to talk to people who put down truthers. I think specifically if you focus on the missing Pentagon videos, we are a very video-oriented society. If a car ran into a mini-mart, their surveillance footage would be across the nation that night.
Where are the Pentagon surveillance videos? Good point, Mike. Thank you very much. Josh in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey, Josh.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. I'm sorry. I just don't buy into this grand conspiracy theory that Bush was behind 9/11.
There's dozens of different possibilities, and one of them is that he had nothing to do with it, and yet still there was a conspiracy here within the United States. Or it could be that the level of his conspiracy was simply, okay, I've been warned that these guys are going to hit, and I can make political hay out of this, so I'm going to go to sleep for 6 months. I mean, he took the longest vacation in the history of the United States presidency, and even at the end of his vacation, he was afraid to go back to Washington D.C. Went to Florida instead, where his brother put the whole state on a state of emergency.
I agree with you. It does seem like that, but I think if there is a conspiracy by the Bush administration, it was that they took advantage of 9/11. I don't think that they.
You don't think that they caused it. Josh, good. You know, thank you very much. And excellent point. And as I said, my mind is not made up. I'm trying to keep an open mind here. We need a real investigation. Josephine in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Josephine.
Hey, thank you, Tom. So good to be on your show. Listen, we just had something recently that happened. We had on August 29th, we had 6 nuclear bombs fly across this country.
Right, down to Barksdale Air Force Base.
That's right, and nobody knows what happened. Nobody's taking any responsibility.
Well, actually, I think about 60 people lost their jobs over that, and people got busted down in rank. There was a news story about that. Assuming that's true, I mean, one never knows with the Pentagon whether there's, you know, CYA going on inside or whether it's public publicity. But yeah, a good point, Josephine. And frankly, I can give you a long list of historical conspiracies going all the way back to the Civil War that were kept secret for more than 40 years. Lisa in South Carolina.
Hello. I would like to know why they only limit it to 2 hypotheses, and why not look at the physical evidence?
Well, I think that's what we were trying to do, is to say there's more than just 2 possibilities, two hypotheses here.
And where did the material go? There's no material there. The guys they rescued out of Stairwell B, when they came out, they said it was like walking onto an empty football field. That's not like any controlled demolition I've ever seen.
That's an interesting one. Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, and all the steel got shipped off, as I recall, to Korea to be melted down, strangely enough. Abby in San Diego, California. Hey, Abby.
Hi, thank you. Well, one thing Kevin didn't mention was the plethora of evidence for controlled demolition, including the molten metal. We see thermite dripping out of the tower before it collapses. Thermite, Stephen Jones, he's a physics professor from BYU, he did forensic testing on the steel, found thermite, which is an explosive incendiary in the military. Hundreds of eyewitness accounts of explosives. Firefighters, emergency responders, William Rodriguez, who's a janitor in the World Trade Center for 20 years, now he spends his life dedicated to spreading the truth, spreading the information that there were explosives. He heard explosives in the sub-basement before the towers were even hit. The free fall speed of both towers, the pulverization of concrete. Wake up, guys. Visit ae911truth.org. Hundreds of architects and engineers who are signing on for a new investigation because right. they've looked at this evidence.
Yeah, I've seen their video. Thank you, Abby. And it's a fascinating site. Bernard in Los Angeles. Hey, Bernard.
Hi, this is Bruno.
Bruno, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree with Abby. Just the videos of the buildings themselves coming down is the evidence. And both towers came down in the exact same way. And this idea, and then Michael.
Couldn't that just have been, incompetent design or intentional design so that if the buildings were ever compromised, they wouldn't hurt, they would hurt as few people as possible?
No, all that steel, you think there's a massive steel grid wrapped around each tower, and there's 47 massive steel columns in the core of the tower, and you think all that steel snapped simultaneously, floor by floor, 110 floors in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That's preposterous.
Okay.
And Michael from Skeptics Magazine offered no evidence to support anything about the official story. I mean,
I got it, Bernard. Thank you very much. And I don't disagree. Katie in Los Angeles, just a very quick one, Katie, and then we've got to go to Tony Parsons.
Okay, I'm from WeAreChangeLA.org. We did the Bill Maher infiltration. We have a truth march and street actions this Sunday, November 11th at 11 a.m. in Santa Monica. Go to WeAreChangeLA.org. It's at Colorado and Ocean Ave at the Bluff at the top of the Santa Monica Pier.
Got it. Thank you very much, Katie, and thanks for coming on and sharing that, and good luck with your demonstration. Tony Parsons is with us. Tony is the owner and operator of Signature Cafe and Catering Company. SignatureCafe.net is the website. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
How are you doing today, Tom?
Just great. You're in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I have had dinner in your cafe. It is absolutely wonderful. You advertise on our local affiliate, KTNF, in Minnesota, AM 950, Air America, Minnesota. What's happening? What kind of results are you getting? What's up?
Well, my wife, Natalie Johnson, and I, co-owners, I basically work for her, of course, and we've been advertising with Janet Robert, owner of AM 950 here in Minneapolis, for a little over 3 years. And we've had just incredible results. We are a little more able to track that being in the restaurant. Most of our customers will come in and say, we're here because we hear your ads on AM 950. And listen to Air America, love your program, and all the other programs that are offered. And we think that we've found a great niche just with the demographics that we have in our restaurant.
So progressive advertising on local progressive talk radio is working for your restaurant, Tony.
Oh, absolutely. We saw the first year we increased probably 180%, I believe we tracked, and each year it's progressively actually gone higher. And we feel that we've just tapped into the perfect marketplace.
How does this compare with other forms of advertising that you've used in the past?
We've done a few local neighborhood. We try to keep things locally and in our neighborhood as far as newspaper ads and a couple that also offer online ads. And, you know, we do get some things back from that. It's just not as visible, and people aren't as likely to let us know that we did see your ad in a newspaper compared to hearing it on the radio.
Yeah.
And we've had other area radio stations call once they heard that we were on AM 950, and we basically say, well, how do your numbers stack up during these time of the day against the programming on AM 950, and their numbers didn't come close, so we couldn't justify being with any other radio station than a progressive radio station.
Yeah. So the bottom line is Progressive Talk Radio is working for the Signature Cafe in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on AM 950 KTNF, a great station, and Tony Parsons. And let me encourage everybody and all of our listeners in Minneapolis to get down to the Signature Cafe and check out their fabulous food, signaturecafe.net. Tony Parsons, thanks for being with us, Tony, and sharing your story with us.
Appreciate it, Tom, and we hope to see you again here soon in the Twin Cities. We love you here.
I think I'll be there in within a month or two, so
great.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you,
thanks,
sir.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Bye now.
Crockett in Iowa City, Iowa. We have about a half a minute here to wrap up this segment. Crockett, you're on the air. Crockett is not there. John in Sunnyvale, California. John, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Has anyone looked into the ownership of the World Trade Center? It had been sold to a private owner partnership in mid-2001, having been built and managed by the Port Authority as a public resource. And then in the negotiations for the...
So it was built publicly and then privatized?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And then it was in the negotiations for the building, they got a insurance coverage that would provide coverage for terrorist bombing.
Which may or may not be unusual, right?
Well, if it was terror, if it was, you know, most...
You think it was unusual. John, I'm sorry we're out of time, but you got your point out, and I appreciate it. I appreciate the call. 16 minutes past the hour.